Mark, if you're on, you can go ahead and start now.
Great. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I'd like to welcome everyone who's with us today. I'm Mark McClellan. I'm the director of the Engelberg Center for Healthcare Reform at Brookings, and we're very pleased to have you here with us for our continuing series of roundtable discussions on medical product surveillance. This is one on a topic that I know is very interesting for all of you, and that's a webinar that will highlight progress from the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute, or PCORI. PCORI was established by the Affordable Care Act as an independent, nonprofit health research organization with the mission of providing patients, their caregivers, and clinicians with the evidence-based information needed to make better-informed healthcare decisions. And today, we're going to hear about an overview of the progress made at PCORI, including a discussion of PCORI's recently announced national priorities and research agenda, its research funding activities and pilot projects, and its methodological standards and further methodologic work plans. Before we begin, though, I'd like to quickly go over a few housekeeping items. As always, we want you to submit questions and comments throughout the presentation today. You can do this online at the chat box, which is on the right side of your screen, anytime if you think of the questions or comments. They'll be put into the queue. Just as a reminder as well, be sure to mute your phone. You can do that either with your telephone directly by pressing the mute button or by pressing star 6. And when you are called on to ask a question, if you put something in the queue that you want to ask yourself, please unmute your line by pressing star 7. So that's star 6 to mute, or your mute button, and then star 7 to unmute. If you have any technical questions or problems along the way, please call our WebEx helpline at 1-866-229-3239. So let's get right to the presentation, since I know we have a lot to talk about. We are very pleased to have with us today Anne Beal, the Chief Operating Officer at PCORI, as well as Sharon Lees-Norman, who's the Vice Chair of the Methodology Committee for PCORI, and also a professor in the Department of Healthcare Policy at Harvard Medical School and a professor in the Department of Biostatistics at the Harvard School of Public Health. They'll go through their presentations, and we'll open up the line for questions. At that point, Greg Daniel, a fellow and managing director for evidence development and innovation at the Engelberg Center at Brookings, will be moderating our question and answer discussion. So again, please remember that at any time you can submit questions or comments during the presentations using the chat box at the right side of your screen, and we will get to those later on in the webinar today. So let's get started. I'd like to hand things over to Anne and Sharon Lees. I think, Anne, you're beginning for us, right? And just make sure you press star 7 to unmute if you're with us.
Can you hear me?
There we go.
Okay, excellent. So I just want to make sure that I can forward the slide. Okay, excellent. So thanks very much for having us come and talk about the work that we're doing at PCORI. This is actually a very opportune time for us because we are in the throes of receiving a number of proposals for our first broad announcement. And so this is very exciting for us to really be starting to see us fulfilling the vision that's been set out for us, as well as the vision that we've been working towards for the past year or so. So let me just jump into it. For those who are not familiar with PCORI, we are an independent nonprofit organization that was authorized by Congress as part of the Affordable Care Act. And really, our mission is to fund research that provides patients, caregivers, and clinicians with evidence-based information to make better informed healthcare decisions. This is really important to understand that when we talk about PCORI and who we are, one of the mantras and the things that we say is we take the P in PCORI very seriously. And think about the fact that when we are trying to fund research, it is not just research for research's sake, but research which is really meant to be used, meant to be applied, and specifically research which is meant to be relevant to patients, caregivers, and their providers. And so one of the things that I find very exciting about what it is that we're trying to accomplish is that not only are we interested in research and being very rigorous, but we're also interested in making sure that the work is meaningful, that it is applied, and that we are asking questions that people will really find useful and supporting research that people feel that will be very meaningful in terms of their ability to be able to make decisions. As part of that also, we're very committed to continuously seeking input from patients in a broad range of stakeholders. And so this is manifest not only by the way that we're trying to learn more about the types of research questions that should be asked, but also in terms of some of our requirements around engagement of patients in the research process itself, as well as engagement of patients in some of the work of PCORI, specifically in some of our review processes. We also think about a broad range of stakeholders that really is anyone who could be potentially interested in issues around patients and patient outcomes. So obviously clinicians and other providers of care would be at the top of that list, physicians, nurses, hospitals, but also thinking about plans, thinking about payers, thinking about purchasers, thinking about other members of the pharmaceutical industry and biotech. These are all entities which really have interest in making sure the patients have information that is available to them to help not only make better decisions, but then to also get to improved outcomes. So as you can see here, that commitment is actually reflected in who is on our board of governors. And so what we have are people who really represent a number of different constituencies. We have patients and consumers and caregivers. We have physicians, nurses, clinicians, health plans, health services, researchers. We have people who represent state perspective as well as people from industry. One of the things, and we were in fact just talking about this earlier today, is that in some ways many of the patients on our board of governor are not necessarily the obvious patients. And one of the things that we often talk about is that we are all patients, that you know, many of us are the parents of patients, many of us are the spouses of patients, many of us are the children of patients. And so it actually has proven to be a very robust part of the discourse that we have at the board level in terms of making sure that people not only come to the PCORI board meetings thinking about the perspectives that they have as professionals, but many also come thinking about the perspectives that they have as patients. So I would say that this is very much, in my view, has been a strength of many of our conversations and deliberations, because it helps us to stay honest and helps us to keep in mind that what it is that we're trying to do is really make sure that we develop work which is relevant to patients across the United States. So specifically, the core duties that we have are at PCORI are really mapped out for us in the legislation that was used to create us. So first and foremost, one of the tasks that was before us was to develop a set of national research priorities. And so this was a process that we went through over the last few months and, in fact, engaged in a very robust public comment period in order to hear about our national priorities as well as to help then develop our research agenda, which emerged from those national priorities. And so that was a process that, as I said, we went through in the last few months, and we actually just finished in May finalizing that process, where we were able to have our board really take through and synthesize all of the information and all of the comments that had come to us through the public comment period and really help to establish both our priorities and the agenda. For us, this was very exciting, because then what it meant is that we could then move forward with that as our framework to think about then what are our funding announcements, which I'll talk about in a moment. In addition, one of the issues that's mapped out in the legislation is that PCORI is really mandated to develop and update best practices around methodologic standards. And you're going to hear from Sharon Lise Norman on that. But also in May, the methodology committee, for which Sharon Lise is the vice chair, delivered to the board the draft methodology report, which is soon going to be open and available for public comment. And so I'll let Sharon Lise talk a little bit more about that. And then lastly, one of the things that the legislation is very clear about is that it is not just enough for us to do the research, but we need to think about how to disseminate that work. And so, again, it gets back to the issue that I was talking about earlier, where I was saying that we are very interested in producing work that is meaningful to patients, their caregivers, and to providers. And understanding that if we're asking the right questions, if we are addressing major issues or major challenges that exist within health and healthcare, then it helps to facilitate then the dissemination of those results. Because what our expectation is, what our hope is that if we are asking the right questions, then getting the word out and getting it utilize and the new information taken up and actually put into clinical practice will be something that will be promoted. And so we're actually right now very much thinking about our activities and our strategies around engagement to help us with exactly just this dissemination process. So one of the questions that we have when we think about one arm of our organization is our engagement arm, and we really have asked ourselves, well, why is it that we even want to engage? And so, again, as we think about different stakeholders, at the top of the list is patients, but then also clinicians, payers, purchasers, other entities, why is it that we want to hear from and engage with these different communities? Well, first and foremost, starting at the upper left-hand side, when we thought about, well, as a research institute, what is it that we're in the business of doing? Well, we're in the business of conducting research. So that means first and foremost, we want to engage with different stakeholder groups to make sure that we are asking the right research questions. And so we are very actively engaged now in a process of thinking through what are the best methods and best practices for hearing from the field on specific research questions, hearing from the field on major challenges within health and healthcare for which research would be very useful for answering those questions, and hearing from them what are some of their priorities in terms of clinical or health challenges that comparative effectiveness research might be very useful in answering those questions. So number one for us is really making sure that we engage with different audiences to really help us identify some of the most important questions that need to be answered. Secondly is then once you have the questions, you need to answer them through your research process. And so as we think about then engaging different audiences for research, we really are taking very much a two-pronged approach. One is that we are thinking about within the context of each of our research projects, we have requirements that all of the research projects need to have a very active participation and partnership with patients and other stakeholders on the research teams themselves. In addition, we're holding ourselves to task on that same requirement, and that within our own study sessions and our own review processes, we are having patients and other stakeholders as very active and engaged members of our review processes. So we're not only asking our award recipients to engage and partner with patients and other stakeholders, but we're also saying that we ourselves and the work that we're doing are going to include them in the review process. And part of what it is that we're establishing as we're creating our review processes is we really want these people to provide input on what I call the so what question. So something, a research question from a methodological perspective may be very interesting or it might be rigorously very sound, but also what we're interested in hearing as part of the review is so what? Does this really make a difference to me? Does this really make a difference to people who are like me? Is this the kind of information that I need to have available to me in order to make a decision or for a provider in order to help my patients make decisions? And so, again, with the review and conduct of actual research, we're asking for a very specific engagement. And then thirdly is around the area of actually accelerating dissemination. As I said earlier, if we're asking the right questions, if we're doing work that is meaningful, if we're engaging people in the right groups right from the beginning in terms of the conduct as well as in terms of the review of the research, then our expectation and hope is that then that will help with dissemination. One, because the information is worthwhile to disseminate, but also because then we've engaged people and their networks up front to help with this work immediately. In addition, one of the things that we've talked about in terms of the actual proposals themselves is that we are now requiring our award recipients to include within their proposals an actual dissemination plan so that dissemination is not just a function of publishing something within the New England Journal, but we're also asking them to think about how do you get the word out or the potential results from your project into the key audiences that would really be able to use the information. And we're also asking people to think very creatively about what it is that that they can use to try to disseminate that information. And then lastly, one of the things that we've talked about is trying to be a learning organization. And so it's very important for us to really think about these audiences is being able to help us understand, are we having the kind of impact that we want to have? And so at the end of the day, if patients aren't seeing the impact, if providers aren't seeing the impact, then we still have more work to do. And so that level of engagement is important to us because, again, it helps us in terms of our organizational self-assessment, and it helps us in terms of our telling ourselves, are we doing the right kind of work? So this really maps out nicely some of what I've talked about in terms of the recent activities that we've been engaged in terms of really moving from priorities to research that patients can use. So as I mentioned earlier, we went through the process of establishing our national priorities and the research agenda, and we are now just recently released our funding announcement, and so this is the phase that we are currently in. But one of the things that I wanted to point out here is that as we look at our funding, as we look at the kinds of questions that are coming in, as we look at the results of the research that we are funding, we are also using that to then learn from that experience to come back and to then help further refine our priorities and the research agenda. So one of the things that you all can definitely expect is that over time we will be refining our funding announcements as well as then doing more targeted funding announcements as we gather information that says or identifies different areas where we need to target our efforts. So what this represents is the timeline that we are currently working in terms of how we establish our priorities and the research agenda. And so it really just takes us up through May, which is when we released our first funding announcement. And I think what's important to understand from this particular slide is that we actually started with the criteria that are mapped out in the law in terms of what is important for supporting and conducting PCORP, patient-centered outcome research. And so there were 9 specific criteria, which I'll talk about in a moment. And then those are what we use as a starting point to then identify the draft priorities, which we then use to help create then the specific agenda, which came out of those priorities. We then, based upon that, went through a public comment period where we heard from a broad range of people and constituencies about feedback, opportunities for improving our agenda, opportunities for expanding it, where there were issues or questions around narrowing it. And we, in fact, received over 500 comments. So based upon that, we were then able to take those comments, incorporate many of them to refine our agenda, and then we're able to then present that to our board in May. Based upon that and then building upon that, we then went and released our first primary funding announcements in early May with the deadline for the first round of those awards actually coming up in a couple of weeks on July 31st. So I'll turn now to talking a little bit more about the 9 criteria that we have, as well as talk a little bit more in detail in terms of our research agenda. So these are the criteria for research that were outlined in the law. And one of the things is we've asked ourselves, what is it that we're doing and how is it that we're doing work differently from others? We've said that these type of criteria in many ways could be a North Star for us. So one of the things that you'll see is that there are criteria in terms of the impact on health of individuals and populations, but also one of the things that we're taking very seriously is that we are an effectiveness institute. And so what we want to understand is what is the opportunity for improvability through research? Is the work that we're going to be supporting really going to be the kind of work that really allows us to look at real patients in real-world settings and answering real questions that people face every day? And so we're interested very much in doing research and research that's rigorous, but we want it to also then be applied or applicable research. And so, again, that is one of the criteria that we look at and think about when we say we want to make sure that anything that we support can really lead to improvements in the healthcare system through research. We're also particularly interested in inclusiveness of different populations. And in particular, one of the things that we said in our funding announcement is that we're interested in actually thinking about patients with multiple chronic conditions. For those of you on the call who are clinicians, you know that every day those are the people with whom we really are working with and who come into our offices. And the reality is that quite often comparative effectiveness research will have so many exclusion criteria for people to participate in the research projects that they may not necessarily represent the reality of what it is that we deal with in clinical settings. And so this inclusiveness of different populations obviously gets to some issues in terms of geographic diversity, race and ethnicity diversity, gender and age diversity. But one of the other things that we're really very keen on is informed by the idea of we want this to be real world work. And so we're actually very keen on the idea of having this work include patients with multiple chronic conditions. In addition, the other big area, and I won't go through all nine of these, is if you go to the upper right-hand side, is that the work that we're supporting really needs to focus on patient-centered outcomes. And so this is very important for us and essentially is the North Star by which we ask all of these research projects when we're trying to determine whether there is a project we want to support or not. But we're interested in the outcomes that matter to patients, pure and simple. And so in many ways, the obvious thought is that, well, this could be around healthcare quality outcomes or functionality outcomes, but then also patients are interested in other issues such as ease of utilization or ability to participate in the workforce or ability to take care of family members. And so as we've been thinking about what are some of the studies that we would potentially support, again, we keep saying that what's critical is that whatever it is that people are looking to study, that the outcome needs to be a patient-centered outcome and relevant and meaningful to patients. So what we have mapped out here are actually the five national priorities for our research agenda. So as you can see, the first one is what we can consider classic CER, which is Assessment of Prevention, Diagnostic, and Treatment Options. And this really represents the lion's share and the major thrust of the types of projects that we will be funding. But in addition, one of the things that we realize is that part of this dissemination challenge, part of this need in order to get the word out on work, is that it is not enough just to have new information. You need to be able to make sure that people are working in health systems that can help disseminate that information. We need to understand what are the best methods and practices for communication and dissemination. We need to make sure that that information gets into different populations at the same rate. And so in many ways, you can think about our assessment area as being the core area for what it is that PCORI does, and then the other areas are really in some ways the ancillary areas that say it's not enough just to have that information, but we need to also understand what are the best practices and the best environment for trying to make sure that that information is disseminated and gets to all populations through the various health systems within which we work. And so then lastly, the fifth area really is around accelerating PCORI and methodologic research. And what this really speaks to is the fact that we are thinking about what is it that, or what are the kinds of investments that need to be made in order to improve the field and improve the field functioning for producing more patient-centered outcomes research. And so our work in this area really falls into two broad areas. One is around real methodology and best practices for best methods for understanding this work and being able to conduct this work. And as I said, Sharon Leese will be working on this and presenting this in a moment. But the other thing that we're thinking about is around what is the infrastructure, both in terms of a research infrastructure as well as a data infrastructure, that might be really helpful and useful to the nation for helping us to become, one, a learning healthcare system, but then two, and more specifically, for us to really be able to help and develop ongoing research that is really patient-centered. And so one of the things that you'll notice is that we have four check marks next to the top four areas, because the broad funding announcements that we released in May really represent those four areas. This fifth one, which is around accelerating PCOR and methodologic research, is one that we're currently working on and thinking through our strategies. And so you all can expect to hear about this PFA, which we'll be releasing later this year. So in terms of the PCOR funding announcements, as I mentioned, these were released in May after our board approved the national priorities and the research agenda. And as I mentioned, they are really based upon the first four of our priorities. As you heard, the fifth one will be issued later this year. And one of the things, though, that I think is worth really pointing out is that we wanted to be very deliberate in making sure that we were very broad with respect to not including calls for any specific condition. And so what we're interested in are the kinds of cross-cutting questions that really can address a number of different conditions, which is not to say that we would not be interested in projects related to diabetes or hypertension or cancer, but what we're also particularly interested in is thinking about, for example, diabetes and a diabetes intervention as a model for a type of intervention that could also be used in hypertension or in cancer. And so, again, our priority is to really think about what are the types of projects and types of questions that can really be applied within healthcare settings. And so, in many ways, patients don't come in and say, I am a diabetic. They may come in and say, I am a person who has pain, or I am a person whose doctors don't talk to one another, or I am a person who can't get all of my questions answered, and they happen to have diabetes. They also happen to have hypertension and hypercholesterolemia, but really they define themselves in a very different way. And so understanding this, and this was something that we heard loud and clear when we did focus groups around patients, we were very deliberate in making sure that our funding announcements were quite broad to allow us to be able to take in projects that really are able to reflect the perspectives of patients. In addition, and this is something which is mapped out in the legislation as well, is that we're also interested in patients with rare diseases or rare conditions, because often these are the kinds of orphan conditions for which there's not been a lot of work, but for which the comparative effectiveness research enterprise could really make a significant impact in terms of the opportunity to identify and create new knowledge to improve their care. And so this is one area that's of particular importance to us. I mentioned that we did conduct focus groups from patients across the country, which helped to identify what some of the priorities are. So as we wrote these funding announcements, we actually were able to include some of the language from our patients that we heard from to really help map out and guide what it is that is a priority and map out and guide what it is that are some of the questions that patients presented to us, which really helped to inform the creation of these PFAs. And once again, and always it should be our North Star, and we've made clear in all of these funding announcements that we're particularly interested in outcomes that matter most to patients. So I'm going to actually go over this slide relatively quickly because I want to make sure that, we have enough time for Sharon Leaf. But the big thing in terms of as we've thought about what is it that makes PCORI funding different, the answer is really simply patient and stakeholder, patient and stakeholder, patient and stakeholder. And so what it is that we're interested in is making sure that they are engaged in the research, that we are thinking very specifically about dissemination, and that we are thinking about really including them and making sure that these questions are really useful. Also mapped out in the funding announcements, we have very specific language in terms of requirements that the work be reproducible and that the work also include a transparent research plan so that if people are doing work which then we want to try to have replicated in other populations that we're able to do that. The nine PCORI criteria, which I mentioned earlier, are going to be very important in terms of identifying what are the projects that we would want to fund, and they're also very important in terms of our review criteria that we're applying to these proposals. We're also very interested in making sure that people really understand the best practices that are mapped out in the methodology report, which Sharon Lease is going to talk about in a moment. One of the things that I want to make clear, though, is that while the deadline for this first round of awards is July 31st, we recognize that we are just now about to launch with the public comment period for our methodology report. And so we understand that we can't necessarily hold people accountable or score them based upon what is in the methodology report for this first round. But we would certainly encourage people to look at the methodology report because it really does represent some of the best thinking in terms of what is out there. For future rounds, absolutely, the criteria and the standards mapped out in that report will be used for scoring proposals going forward. So in terms of stakeholders, one of the things and the questions that actually has been presented to us many, many times before is exactly who is it that we think about when we're talking about stakeholders. And so it's important to understand that obviously at the top of our list are patients, but then also we're thinking about very broad audiences in terms of other individuals or other organizations who might be interested in outcomes for patients. So this can represent non-professional caregivers, usually family members. This can represent clinicians. And what we're really thinking about are, you know, frontline providers, people who really spend the lion's share of their time focused on patient care. Obviously, patient advocacy groups, community groups, researchers, other policymakers and other institutions. But when we call upon our researchers to really think about actively engaging and partnering with patients and other stakeholders, we recognize that in many ways this is a very diverse group. But part of what it is that we're trying to get to is that we want to make sure that the questions that are being asked are relevant to the people who need to address these questions every single day. So the kinds of roles that patients and stakeholders can play in terms of the research team is really everything from soup to nuts. They can participate in the formulation of the research questions. They can help with actual identification of study participants and what some of the questions are, as well as what some of the specific interventions as well as outcomes are. Obviously, they can be involved in the ongoing monitoring and conduct of the study. And then at the end of the day, once the study results are out, they can certainly help with dissemination of the research results. I think one of the things is similar to as we think about researchers, we may not necessarily have a professional team and expect that an individual on a professional team is able to really participate in all parts of this sort of research trajectory. And similarly, with a patient and stakeholder team that participates in the research proposal, we may not have just one individual who's able to work on this. So it may be a team of patients and stakeholders, some of whom are very good with generation of questions and identifying the characteristics of the study participants, others who may be very good in ongoing monitoring, and others who may be very good in terms of dissemination. But these are the different ways that folks can get involved with the actual research project. The other thing that we're actually very keen on is having people really engage as participants in and being reviewers for our funding announcements that we currently have out and available. And so this is just my little plug to say for anybody who's out there to really think about joining us and applying to become a reviewer. One of the things to understand is that we are interested in both scientific reviewers as well as lay reviewers and people who might have a different type of perspective. And so there may be a professional, say a physician, who doesn't really do research but really is spending a lot of time in practice or spending a lot of time doing work in policy or spending a lot of time with his or her professional society. Those are exactly the kind of people who we are interested in having join us as reviewers. So please do come to our website and think about joining us in this work. Now, I want to switch gears a little bit and just talk a little bit about the Pilot Projects Program because, as many of you may know, earlier this year we released a call for pilot projects to really help us identify some of the infrastructure that we need for conducting Peace Corps. And so these were awards that we gave earlier this year, and they really represent an investment of $30 million over 2 years for 50 pilot projects. And so I won't go into these in detail, but what this is just a snapshot from our webpage, which shows where these pilot projects were funded. And one of the things over time, as we fund more and more projects, we're really very interested in determining really what our reach is and making sure that we're able to get to really all 50 states across the United States to really try to disseminate the work around PCORI and promoting patient-centered outcomes research. Just very briefly, the research topics which we had as part of our pilot projects, what's important to understand is that these were topics that were really designed to help us understand best practices for conducting Peace Corps. And so as you can see here, we wanted to really understand more about the research process. We were interested in supporting work around developing tools. We were interested in helping to think about different types of interventions that understood patient-centered outcomes. We were also interested in understanding patient interactions with the healthcare team. And so in many ways, as you can see, that these are all the types of questions which really get to being able to identify and support patient-centered outcomes research, and this is the kind of work that we're interested in definitely seeing the results now, but then also seeing its application into the broader set of classic comparative effectiveness research that we're going to be funding going forward. So in closing, our next steps really are that we will be issuing the draft methodology report for public comment, which Sharon Lease will be talking about. In addition, as part of our engagement, we are going to be establishing advisory groups, and we're actually now actively engaged in thinking through what would be the structure of those advisory groups, what would be the topics, who is it that we want to participate in terms of those advisory groups. So for any of you who are on the call, I would encourage you to actually come to our webpage and sign up to receive announcements about different engagement activities that we have, because that's how we're going to be announcing the different advisory groups that we'll be developing over the course of the next few months. As I mentioned, we now have our broad funding announcements out there, but next we're going to be thinking about really learning from that preliminary experience to issue targeted funding announcements. So look for those to be coming out over the next few months as well. And July 31st represents the deadline that we have for our broad funding announcements, and then we'll be actively engaged in the scientific and merit review of those applications, and then with the plan of then awarding this first round of primary research contracts by the end of this calendar year. So there's a lot that's going on, but I want to make sure that we have enough time for Sharon Lee to talk about the great work of the methodology committee.
Thank you, Anne. Sharon Lees, are you on the line? Again, *7 to unmute if you haven't done that yet.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, sorry about that. I was talking away, I told a few jokes. I wanted to start out by first thanking Brookings for this opportunity, and Mark McClellan in particular. This is a great way for us to tell you what we've been doing, and certainly gave a nice update on what the Institute has accomplished since its inception. So I'm going to talk about the Methodology Committee and what we have been up to. So the PCORI Methodology Committee is comprised of 17 experts, and those experts cover multiple domains. Some of them are listed in front of you: health services, clinical research, biostatistics, genomics, there's epidemiologists, there's nursing, there's lots of different expertise represented. And as well as we have two members, one member from NIH and one member from AHRQ, that also populates our methodology committee. And so you can definitely learn more. Some pictures are selected here that of six of the members, but I'll encourage you to go and look more at our site about the members if you're interested. think in terms of the objectives of the methodology committee, we again, as Anne indicated, the legislation really laid out some specifics, and in particular, we had a deliverable. That is, the methodology committee had a deliverable of a report for May 2012. And so if we look at the legislation, we're supposed to provide guidance about the appropriate use of methods in patient-centered outcomes research to help establish priorities to address gaps in research methods and their applications, to make and recommend actions to support standards, and then finally to map research methods to specific research questions. And this was actually called a translation table in the legislation. And so, again, we have a particular charge and a particular deliverable, and that's the draft methodology report that Anne described earlier, and I'll go over that in a moment. So the methodology report, the way we had come up with that, took us, the methodology committee was formed, I believe, in February or March of 2011, and our report, first methodology report, was due May to the Board of Governors of PCORI, May 2012. And so we spent a lot of time quickly getting together and figuring out how to select items. When I say items, what particular methods are we going to talk about in our first report in terms of establishing standards? So I'll talk about how we identified and prioritized those major research method questions, how we then gathered information to learn about some of those research methods and where the gaps were, then our internal review process for those particular methods and information that were provided to us, because we did solicit information and funded some contracts to give us details about methodology. And so we had an internal review, and I'll talk through that in a moment. And then finally, we came up with a draft set of recommendations, and those are available now, but will be publicly released, I mean, in terms of the real report, the draft report will go out for public comment this month. So the methodology report, one can imagine, methodology is a very, very broad term, and how can we, the methodology committee thought, well, how are we going to actually select topics for our first report? So what we did was the methodology committee got together. We looked at in discussions with the Board of Governors of PCORI, and we sort of looked at topics that we felt were directly related to patient-centered outcomes research. And clearly the first report can't cover everything. And so what we did was we looked at that, a bunch of questions, a bunch of topics. We had some meetings. And then what we did was we gathered individuals, about 100 individuals from across the country, to actually contract to do some research for us. There were various calls out to respond to us. When I say us, I mean PCORI. We set up some topics that we felt that were important. There were a list of topics. Those topics covered areas such as causal inference, diagnostic tests, heterogeneity of treatment effects. What I mean by that is, how does one assess whether or not a particular intervention, the effectiveness of an intervention differs by patient subgroups, and things such as that. And so we put out a call and said, you know, who's interested in and has the expertise to actually develop standards or call the literature to be able to provide a standards of those. And we had very good responses. Not all the topics, we didn't receive responses for all topics that we put out, but we did for the majority. And so we did a contract with 17 groups to provide us with information on that. And then we held a number of workshops, and those workshops, two of them were held in March in 2012, and these workshops were related to two particular types of topics. One was related to patient-centeredness. You know, we hear a lot about patient-centeredness and patient-centered research, and what does it really mean, and how can we ensure that we're getting it right? What are the barriers to patient-centered research? What standards should be implemented? And so that was one of the topics of the workshop. The second topic of the workshop was really to look at how does one, again, from more of a methodological, very sort of standardized, systematic approach, how does one prioritize research? And so that particular topic would involve things such as looking at how the grant review process works in terms of reviewing grants. How does, if you wanted to select a topic that one thinks has the most impact, how would you go about doing that? And so there are techniques called value of information analyses. So again, that was the second workshop, one that really talked about or focused on how do we prioritize research from various stakeholders' point of views. And then the last topic, again, is responding to what we were asked to do as part of the legislation, is to come up with this translation table. And a translation table, again, if you sort of look that word up and figure out what did the legislators really have in mind when they thought about this, it's a little bit vague. And certainly a table sounds low-dimensional, but we really know that that table could be very high-dimensional in terms of how do we actually think about putting together a framework for a particular question that someone may have. And so what we did was we did the same thing as with the other research team. We put out an RFI and said, request for information to get the public viewpoint in terms of if they were asked to think of developing this translational framework. I have a question. What's this general framework I could use in order to develop a study that, again, that framework would have to be patient-centered, and so how would we think about that? And so we put out an RFI for that, and we received 24 submissions on various ideas that individuals or groups of individuals had in terms of thinking about how does one develop a translation framework or translation table. In the information, we also thought of, you know, today we are hearing a lot, and everybody on this participating in this webinar is probably aware of this, the availability and the global connectedness of the world in terms of electronic data systems. And so what we wanted to be able to do is to understand how we can use electronic health records and other informatics to actually undertake comparative effectiveness research. What exists in terms of what's out there, what guidelines exist, what are the problems, where are things going? And so there were detailed interviews that were undertaken. We had some consultants to help find the stakeholders, interview them. And then we also undertook a detailed literature review of that particular topic. And then finally, although it's not on this slide, there was a meeting that was held July 2nd, just a few weeks ago, at Stanford that brought together several different representatives and constituencies who have interests in electronic health records or data networks or data registries. So again, a big piece of our work during the first year was to look at what people have done, where things are going, what are the possibilities both of methodological research in terms of designing as well as infrastructure, the availability of existing networks or other collaborative cloud type relationships that one could look at and use for the purposes of conducting patient-centered outcomes research. So in terms of that, we have these contracts. We had RFIs that informed us, and so that meant we had to put all that information together and determine what would go into our first methodology report. And so what we did was we asked the individuals that sent us information that we contracted with So, for example, one contract, for example, was awarded looking at developing standards for diagnostic tests. And for each of the contracts that were awarded, we asked those contractors to use a standardized template to structure their rationale for the standards that they were suggesting. And so those rationales related to five specific aspects. One was patient-centeredness. And so was the standard really one that says, okay, it is a patient-centered standard? Was how, look at the scientific rigor of the standard, look at that transparency of it, look at the empirical and theoretical basis on which the proposed standard is suggested. So, for example, there was we have some information or standards for missing data, and one could cite lots of different studies, theoretical and simulation and empirical, that talked about why one needs to use particular methods to deal with missing data. And there were other considerations that related to, so how practical is this standard if we were requiring everybody to, do a very complicated analysis? That wouldn't make a lot of sense. And so if we were requiring everybody to do, let's say, to deal with missing data, where maybe we say everybody has to do multiple imputation, and they've got to do it a certain way, that might not be very practical. So again, the practicality, feasibility, and how costly those particular standards that we recommended may be. And so through consensus, what happened was then we had that information from the contractors. It was put together. We actually looked at these standards. There were sort of 11 domains that for which we had contractors respond to, and we awarded them to do work on. And they related to basically how to formulate research questions, the patient-centeredness, the research prioritization I talked about in a minute ago. And then along those, you can think of lots of different types of methodology, causal inference. What are some standards for inferring causality? Does A cause B with randomized trial data, but mostly, more importantly, with observational data? To look at adaptive trials, are there standards now for adaptive trials? And these are trials that actually permit changes as the trial is being conducted. And so you may actually change how many patients are going to be allocated to a particular treatment arm or intervention arm, or whether or not you eliminate an intervention arm altogether. So that type of thing. And then I had said already about the heterogeneity of treatment effects, missing data. And so those are on the slide that you're seeing right now represent sort of the general areas that are represented in our report. And then finally, the translation table, and this was something that the methodology committee found very challenging. It's interesting, and we're working on it, and it's a fascinating problem, personally, in terms of how do you actually map methods to specific research questions. And so how do you first, the way we thought about it is, okay, first define your research question, then define the interface in terms of what are the features of that question. What particular features of the study that you really find important? So it's the evidence characteristics, how much trade-off are you willing to make with generalizability, validity, et cetera. And those are the sets of dimensions. And then what we next wanted to do was match the research question to a study design, data source, and analytical strategy. And so you may have a very different study design or data source or analytical strategy if you're going to tackle a question that relates to evidence synthesis, or if you're going to tackle a question that wants to evaluate whether or not a particular diagnostic test is effective in terms of patient-centered outcomes research. And so, again, there are particular features of those types of questions that would really matter. And so what you see is a very preliminary, and it looks like a very messy graphic in front of you right now. But where we ended up with the translation framework, which is the very first step of this, and the idea really is to make this dynamic and not a picture, but something that's interactive that one could say, let me try and walk you through it, and I see it's 11:55, so I shouldn't take too much time. But if you look at step one, which is on the bottom of the graphic, that really says prioritize your study characteristics. Do you really want, do you want it to be very quick? And again, this is all very, I would think, logical, but nonetheless very practical to say, okay, let's think about these things. If you want an answer in 2 years versus 5 years, then you're going to have to give up on something else. And maybe you're going to give up on getting a very precise answer because you can't accrue that many patients or have that many individuals. So, again, those are the study characteristics that the investigators would want to have. And also those relate to the patient questions and the research questions. And so one of the things that we also, again, if it's a patient-centered we're talking about patient-centered outcomes, and so what's the comparator? So now I'm on the left-hand side of that graphic, the bottom underneath patient question and research questions. If we specify the elements, what is the comparator? And so one thought that we had is, for example, a placebo is not really, in most, virtually all situations, for a patient-centeredness study, not acceptable. We probably would say, no, I think you need to use usual care. So these types of questions, what are the comparators? What are the outcomes? What are the treatment settings that you want to think about? Are we talking about in rural places? Are we talking about in huge medical centers, et cetera? And then for each research category, which I mentioned, therapeutics, diagnostics, et cetera, then you need to think about a study design. And so if we're going to talk about a particular, let's say, drug, there would be one type of design. If it was an intervention that perhaps is a mental health intervention that involves using treating groups of patients, that's a different type of design. And so, again, that's the phase two. And then we need to go on to phase three and then report and dissemination. So, again, that was just the proposed structure. It is bare bones, but this is where we're working in terms of actually making, again, this particular translation framework something that is dynamic. The idea is that you could look at, let me click on diagnostics, and I know that I want to prioritize the external validity, the heterogeneity, et cetera. Those are the things I want the most. And then this translation framework would help bring you down the line to a particular study design and how you would, possible data sources and how you would actually execute and analyze that study. So with that said, and I see it's 11:58 at least on my machine, I just wanted to say that I really strongly recommend you look at the preliminary draft methodology report. The website is in front of you. You can look there. We are releasing, I think that I believe July 23rd is going to be the one that's going to be released where we're going to solicit public comment from. I strongly encourage you to subscribe to PCORI updates. And you can follow PCORI on Twitter or the YouTube channel. And so again, on the right hand side, you're going to see our, published report. It was a report meant for the Board of Governors. We are responding currently to staff and Board of Governors comments, and PCORI intends to release that, and I'm blanking on the date. I don't know if it's July 23rd or whatever, but this month for public comment, and we really, really do want to encourage people to look at this document. So I'm going to stop because the time is out, and I see someone's stop me anyhow. So thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Sharon Lees, and thank you, Anne, both of you, for very informative presentations. Since we are just about out of time, if I could just ask if you both are willing to stay on for a few extra minutes so that we can get to some questions from the audience.
Sure.
Okay,
great. And then for those of you listening, if you're not able to stay on, presentation materials for these presentations as well as the Q&A session will be archived and available on the Brookings website in the next few days. And for the audience listening, please, if you do have questions, make sure that you use the chat box feature on the webinar, and we'll be able to get to those in the order in which they're submitted. But first, while we're waiting for others to submit questions, I do have just a couple. I think perhaps the first one to Anne. Anne, you did mention that an important feature of PCORI is dissemination of results to all of the stakeholders, and that you are asking award recipients to outline some of those dissemination plans. Can you provide just a little bit more comment on that part of it, and perhaps, you know, how those dissemination plans might differ for patients versus clinicians and caregivers?
Sure, happy to. So I think for most researchers, we think about dissemination really begins and ends with publication in the peer-reviewed literature. But recognizing that, you know, most of my patients do not read the New England Journal of Medicine, so if I want to get information to my patients, where is it that I would go? And so this might be anything as basic as if I'm working with a community organization that is doing health updates in the community, if I want to write an op-ed that goes into my local paper, if I'm interested in actually presenting not just at the research meetings but potentially at patient and other stakeholder meetings, these are other ways to think about really disseminating work to go to different audiences. And so we've actually been very deliberate in being very broad with the guidelines that we have for the researchers, but what we've said loud and clear is that it does not begin and end with the peer-reviewed literature, and so they have to think about other ways to disseminate the work. The other thing, though, is that we recognize that that at this stage, when someone is submitting a proposal to us, they may not necessarily yet know that they have a positive or a reportable finding. And so what we're really asking people to do is include a dissemination plan that demonstrates the thinking about it. But then once we actually have the results, then there may be a different set of activities that we would either help them to do on their own or that we would provide support for them to do as well.
Great. Thank you, Anne. Next question that I have, perhaps Sharon Lees, you could perhaps address this, and then I do have a question. After this question, I can go to Bray Patrick Lake. So Sharon Lees, can you comment just real briefly on whether or not the methodology committee has considered or is planning to look at measurement of patient-reported outcomes?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So yes, there is both some standards for patient outcomes and patient-reported outcomes. So we definitely are interested in that. We wanted to differentiate between patient-reported outcomes from patient-centered outcomes because I'm sure this is obvious, but not all patient-centered outcomes need to be patient-reported outcomes. So the brief answer is yes to your question.
Great, thank you. So the question from Bray Patrick Lake is, the question is PCORI staff taking pre-application meetings, and what's your plan around that?
So one of the challenges that we have as a startup is that we're actually still relatively light in terms of the staffing. The other principle that we talk about a lot is that we want to make sure that anyone who applies to us is applying to us with the same access to information that all others have. So, in fact, all questions that we're taking, we're actually taking electronically and then submitting both questions and answers within 24 hours so that the entire field can see the question. So at this point, we are not doing individual meetings on potential projects. Instead, what we're doing is asking people that if they have questions to submit them to us, and then that way we can post, as I said, both the question and the answer for all to see.
Great, thank you. Next question is from Patrick Archdeacon. Patrick, I'm going to go ahead and let you ask this. It's a bit longer, so star 7 to unmute if you're still on.
Can you hear me?
Sure. Yes.
Great. So thanks very much for the webinar. It really helped me understand a lot better how you're prioritizing applications in terms of how you're giving out awards. I was just wondering if you could comment a little bit. Does PCORI primarily see itself as a funding organization, or is this sort of one side of what you do and there there's going to be another side where you guys are going to be an active partner and actually performing some CER work or other types of research functions.
That's a great question. So yes, the lion's share of our activities and frankly our budget is related to research which is going on that will be supported by the people who receive our awards. The other thing that we think about, though, is that the other arm of our organization really is focused on this issue of dissemination and engagement. And so some of the work that we're going to be doing in that arm, which will also include essentially some awards that go out through a competitive RFP process, will also be about promotion of that work. And then lastly, although not anytime soon on the horizon, we probably will be doing some of our own intramural work, but right now we're really primarily targeted and focused on making sure that we are getting monies out the door and really supporting work that's going on in the field.
Great. That looks like all of the questions that we had. So I would like to, again, thank Anne and Sharon Lee for a terrific presentation. And I'd also like to thank everybody who tuned in today for joining today's webinar. As I mentioned, the presentation materials, including the audio, will be posted on the Brookings website over the next few days. And then lastly, just to let everybody know, we are planning a few more webinars over the summer, including highlights from the Observational Medical Outcomes Partnership Annual Symposium, and that webinar will be on August 8th. We'll be sending out an announcement in the next coming week, so keep an eye out for that. And again, thanks everybody for joining, and have a great day.